And we're joined in the studio now by Erin Stojan-Rockolo. She's the Director of Electricity Markets for Fresh Energy, and Amanda Billick, who is an Energy Policy Specialist with the Great Plains Institute. They're giving a presentation tonight at 7 o'clock at the Northern Sustainability Symposium at North House. It's called Minnesota Energy Future, Renewable Energy, Efficiency, and Local Opportunities. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for cutting your dinner a little short to be with us. We appreciate it. Well, let's just jump right in. You say that the presentation is about renewable energy in Minnesota. Could you both just address how you feel the state of renewable energy is in Minnesota right now?
Sure. Well, this is Erin. I work with an organization called Fresh Energy. We're based in St. Paul. We work on clean, fair, and efficient energy system, basically working for policy to achieve that. In the state of Minnesota, we actually, we've made a lot of progress towards cleaning up our electricity system. In 2007, we actually passed a law, actually a suite of laws, that established, for one thing, a renewable energy standard in the state. It basically said that the utilities have to actually achieve about 25% of their electricity from renewable energy sources by 2025. The state's largest utility, Xcel Energy, actually has to achieve 30% by 2020. And all of our utilities are actually making great progress towards those goals. That's actually one of the reasons that we're here in Grand Marais tonight, to talk a little bit about the legislative work that we're doing to basically build on that progress and strengthen Minnesota's commitment to renewable energy.
And this is Amanda, and I work for the Great Plains Institute, and the mission of our organization is to transform the way that we produce, distribute, and consume energy to be more economically and environmentally sustainable over time.
Okay, and maybe one of you could just explain briefly, what is renewable energy? What kinds of systems or products are renewable?
Yeah. So renewable energy can encompass a lot of different technologies. We think of it as wind energy, solar. I do a lot of work on biomass energy, so using either crops or forestry sources as a way to provide electricity or thermal energy or even transportation fuels.
And Erin, you mentioned that the utilities and so forth are well on their way toward meeting these goals that were outlined in the 2007 laws.
Yep, that's
so
right.
So how much of the state's electricity is produced by renewables right now?
It's about roughly 13% is produced by wind right now. Less than 1%, though, is actually produced by solar power. And that's much less than states that have a much less favorable solar resource. So that's actually another aspect of the legislation that we're hoping to move forward this session.
Interesting. And does biomass come up on the register, Amanda, or is it pretty low?
It is also fairly low, and there is a lot of opportunity. And what is maybe a little bit more unique about biomass, or something that is available for biomass, is a way to help meet some of our thermal energy needs. So instead of using biomass to produce electricity, we can use it as a source for our heating, and especially for displacing propane or fuel oil that currently provides heating to some households. Is a real opportunity for biomass to sort of fit into the overall energy structure.
That would be a more efficient use of that particular technology?
More efficient use. And in a state like Minnesota, we are blessed with a very abundant wind resource, and we can produce wind fairly cheaply. Erin's more the expert in the wind energy area, but biomass is able to meet thermal energy needs in, I think, a more efficient way, and also not compete necessarily against wind on the electricity markets, where biomass is just generally more expensive to produce for electricity.
Okay. Well, how much of our electricity do you think could be sustained by renewables if we really focused effort on it? I know that, you know, some of the arguments are the storage of it or having it available instantly, that kind of thing. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, in Minnesota, utilities are part of a Midwest grid. Basically, it's a regional electricity system. And so even though it's true to say that, you know, the wind isn't always blowing and the sun isn't always shining, it usually is blowing somewhere, and it usually, you know, the sun is obviously shining somewhere. And so the key is really to have a robust regional transmission system so that we can actually move energy from where it's being generated to where it's needed. So, I mean, from that perspective, the Midwest Grid Operator has actually done a wonderful job of integrating the renewables that were required by state policies like Minnesota. They're going to continue to do so. When the Department of Energy has actually looked at scenarios where up to 80% of the United States electricity is actually generated by renewables, what they find is that there are no hard limits on exactly how much renewable energy can be integrated into the grid. It's really a question of engineering challenges that with the appropriate tools can be overcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that currently about 13% of Minnesota's electricity comes from renewables.
That's right.
What is the nationwide figure? Do you know?
I think that it is around the 10% range.
That sounds about right.
So we're a little above average.
We are a little above average.
Good to know.
Garrison always says.
That's right.
Yeah, we're all a little above average.
That's right. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Erin Stojan-Rockolo. She's with Fresh Energy, and Amanda Billick from Great Plains Institute. They're going to be speaking tonight at North House at the Northern Sustainability Symposium about Minnesota's energy future in regards to renewable energy. This question for both of you. You work with these organizations. Do you focus on community, group, statewide projects, or do you also work with individuals who want to make changes or to implement renewable energy? Because I would think that many of your guests this evening at your talk will be more individual level, mm-hmm. home level, small business kinds of things.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I can speak for Fresh Energy. We focus on policy change, basically. And so we kind of focus on creating the space for folks who want to move forward with these kinds of energy solutions so that they're able to deal with, for example, their utility in a very consistent way. I've been talking a little bit about the legislation we've been working on this session. It's a pretty broad-ranging, encompassing piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. And actually, another piece of it is the specific issue of removing barriers to local power production. What we find, I'm sure folks are familiar with this, anybody that's participated in trying to create some kind of a solar project on their house or what have you, find that they run into barriers at their utility level. Sometimes they run into barriers with the city that they're working within. And so one of the pieces of legislation that we're working on is to reduce some of those barriers, whether they are financing or working with the utility.
Okay. How about you, Amanda?
I also work on policy at mm-hmm. the state level and even at the federal level in order to help enable individuals or even businesses to come together to implement renewable energy projects, mostly bioenergy projects. And the policy that we work on is really also about enabling or eliminating some of those barriers. And maybe the projects that we've worked on in the past, we also do some project work. It is usually with businesses, but also with cooperatives, so groups of farmers that might be coming together to do an energy project. I've also worked with individual agriculture operations in the past to implement renewable energy projects. Mm. So really okay. A broad range.
All right. Is this changing much? Is the cost of implementing these things dropping at all? Because I know when it first became, more popular and more well-known, it was quite expensive to, let's say, set up a solar array at your home. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, about the costs involved.
Yeah, I think that Minnesota's experience with wind is a really good example. Wind policy in Minnesota, the first utility scale wind we saw implemented in 1994 with Xcel Energy when they made an agreement about the dry cask storage from their nuclear power plants. From that point, we went to 2007 when we actually had our first renewable energy standard. And then, of course, we have where we are today. And basically, at the point when wind was actually put into state law, or actually renewable energy standard was put into state law, wind is the most economic of the renewable resources. That's why we actually see most of mostly wind being represented within the renewable energy standard. But it wasn't necessarily the most economic resource at the time. But now, actually, if you were to build new generation, wind is actually one of the most economic resources. It's competitive with natural gas. Natural gas is at all-time lows in terms of the prices that it's bringing at the market. And it's actually cheaper than new coal generation, which is not a situation that many people thought that we would be in back when the law was actually passed. Solar power by example, is also the technology is just decreasing dramatically in terms of the costs. In fact, the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab with the Department of Energy actually recently did a study looking at the costs of solar panels between here and where it's much more widely deployed, Germany. And what they actually found is that the difference in the cost was actually not the technology itself, but it was something called the balance of system costs, which includes, you know, the issues related to financing, to permitting, all of the various uncertainties that can be associated with putting up solar projects. And those are issues that can be dealt with effective public policy. And so that's one of the reasons that we're hoping to kind of streamline that process and make it easier for folks to be able to get through that process.
Mm-hmm. You want to add to that, Amanda?
Yeah, I would say that for some of the biomass technologies, the costs are starting to fall. But as Aaron mentioned, natural gas prices are at an all-time low. And so especially if a biomass project is trying to replace natural gas, it is not cost competitive at this time. But the other area of technology that we do some work on is also looking at ways to maybe use renewable natural gas from some of our biomass resources. So it could be a replacement in vehicles or semi-trucks that have converted over from diesel to compressed natural gas, and then to have a renewable source of that gas. And the price differential between diesel and even renewable natural gas is becoming much more cost competitive, and producers can save money. And there are a lot of trucking fleets all across the Midwest that are currently doing some conversions from diesel to natural gas because of the low prices. But there are also a lot of projects that are moving forward for supplying a source of renewable natural gas as well.
Okay, great. Well, you both mentioned, working at the policy level, talking about legislation. What are you pursuing this year as far as
legislation?
Yeah.
I can start maybe because I have, it's not as complicated as what I was working on.
Okay.
So we worked with a broad coalition of businesses from the Twin Cities, as well as biofuel producers in greater Minnesota, as well as different environmental organizations through a long process over the last year, maybe even 2 years, because right now Minnesota has a policy for renewable fuels displacement. It's about a 10% goal to replace, to use, in the law right now is specific to ethanol only. But there are lots of other renewable fuel options that are available in the marketplace and that are also available to qualify underneath a federal policy. And so we worked with these different stakeholders to broaden our current mandate that we have in law to be broader than just ethanol, and also upped the goal that we have at the state level. Well, almost, it hasn't been signed by the governor yet, but also upped the goal at the state level for overall petroleum displacement. So trying to get towards a goal of having 30% petroleum displacement in Minnesota by 2025.
Displaced by something renewable.
By something renewable, exactly.
Okay.
And then the other piece that we were working on was there's a state board called the Next Gen Energy Board that makes funding recommendations and policy recommendations for how to utilize our biomass resources more efficiently for both electricity, thermal, and also transportation fuels. And so we broadened that to also include another option that's available in our state, which is using biomass to produce a chemical replacement, a bio-based chemical replacement that is also a petroleum displacement over time. And in lots of different industrial products, solvents, resins, even shampoos. And so there's companies that are producing a bio-based alternative to replace petroleum in those types of products.
So not just as fuel, but as an ingredient in producing various
products. Yep.
Okay.
Products and chemicals.
Okay. Erin?
Well, Fresh Energy is actually part of a broader campaign called the Clean Energy and Jobs Campaign. It's basically a consortium of about 60 organizations and from a broad range of Minnesota stakeholders, I guess. We're talking about citizen groups, obviously the environmental advocacy folks, conservation groups, wildlife protection groups, all kinds of folks that are coming together, businesses, labor, faith groups, students, and they're basically working for an ambitious platform, building off of the successes we've seen with the Renewable Energy Standard in 2007. And I would say that that platform is kind of broken up into three major parts. One is actually setting a separate solar energy standard in the state, which I've talked a little bit about. We started out with a 10% by 2030 standard, but now the current bill is 2% by 2025. We are also working for building on the renewable energy standard, which would be separate. This would be a 40% by 2030 standard. And then we have a suite of policies that, as I mentioned before, we're really interested in, you know, reducing those barriers to folks that want to be able to do solar projects on their homes and businesses. One of those policies is actually through the net metering policy. I know that sounds very wonky, but basically it's a standard contract that's between the customer and the utility. It's designed to basically allow folks to easily interconnect projects to the utility, at least in a standardized way between different utilities. Essentially, it allows folks to be able to bring production or use production from their solar energy system on site. So basically, your meter actually spins backwards instead of forwards. Mm-hmm. What we are seeking to do is actually to increase the project size that would be eligible under net metering. Currently, it's only a 40 kilowatt cap, which is great for residences. It's not so great for medium-sized businesses and institutions that are larger than that. And so essentially, the legislation before us right now is actually increasing that cap to 1 megawatt, which is quite a bit larger. It's also in keeping with the time that we're at right now. The original law was actually passed in 1981. It was the first net metering law in the country, and obviously technology has progressed quite a bit since then. Another policy that we are pursuing is something called community shared solar. Now, you probably know a lot of folks that don't have a good rooftop to install solar. Maybe you have a tree, perhaps your roof is in the wrong orientation, or maybe you live in something like a townhouse where you don't even own the roof, or you're a student, you live in a dorm. You know, there are lots of situations where people can't take advantage of their rooftop. And so essentially, community shared solar allows people to actually buy a subscription from a larger project and then be credited for the generation from that project on their bill. It's a much easier way.
Yeah. Like a community garden.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And so it's a much easier way that people can get involved. They can get solar on their rooftop. They can take advantage of economies of scale, obviously, from having a larger project. And, you know, they don't have to invest as much upfront because they're not actually owning the entire project. So it's easier from a financing perspective for somebody to get engaged with it.
Sure.
So that's one part of the bill that's also moving forward. And finally, we have something else. we're getting into technical speak again, but it's something called a third-party ownership option. And what that means essentially is that you have the ability to contract with a company basically to own a project on top of your house, and they can either lease the project back to you or they can sell you back the electricity. Under current law, if that company contracts with more than 25 customers, they risk being called a utility under the law.
Okay.
And so the legislation that we have would actually clarify that they are specifically not a utility. And so those are the kinds of provisions that we're moving forward so that hopefully, you know, it reduces the barriers, the amount of investment, the amount of financing that people have before they can actually participate in these kinds of projects.
So that would make it just more of a service that someone would buy, like
precisely.
Perhaps like cable or something.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, in the few minutes that we have left here, you've certainly covered a lot of ground. What else are you going to be speaking about this evening at North House that we haven't touched on? Just briefly.
Yeah, the only other thing I would say is how to get involved, because of course that's the most important part of all of this. The legislation that I'm talking about is actually the Omnibus Energy Bill. It's House File 956 and Senate File 901, which is burned into my brain at this point. and it's actually moving very quickly through the process. So we actually expect it to be heard in its last Senate committee early next week. It's going to be up on the House floor and the Senate floor next week. This is the perfect time to talk to your elected officials about this legislation and to the governor. It's going to be going to conference committee after the floor, and that's going to require leadership from both bodies to figure out who is going to decide exactly how the two versions of the bill are going to move forward. So
okay.
It's a very, very critical time. It's a perfect time if you've been waiting all legislative session for a time to contact your legislators.
And your website is what, Erin?
It's fresh-energy.org.
Okay, and how about yours, Amanda? And what are Where, how could people get involved with the Great Plains Institute?
Well, so one other thing that I'll be talking about tonight that we didn't cover today is we are part of a coalition called the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota, and there is more information at mnbioeconomy.org. We are going to be putting together a slate of policy ideas for the 2014 legislative session that would hopefully provide some additional incentives for communities like Grand Marais that are interested in doing district heating projects and other types of renewable heating projects.
Okay.
And then the information for the Great Plains Institute is at gpisd.net.
Well, great. Well, thank you both for joining us.